Let me be the first to tell you that I am not a big fan of comics, and I know that's sort of an absurd thing to say when I'm about to do a whole episode on the topic, but I do recognize their importance in society and culture, and know that part of learning about Spain also has to do with learning about things like this, about comics and things that I don't necessarily follow personally. But they sort of help to complete my understanding of the country. So I said, even though I'm not a huge fan of comics, I do have to admit that on one hand I say that with pride, but on the other hand I say that with a touch of jealousy. I admire people who love and appreciate comics, their knowledge of the details of the different artists, of the stories, and they're obviously getting something out of it that I'm not. It's true that I did, when I was a kid, I used to enjoy a comic strip here and there, the classics like Peanuts or Garfield. And then maybe in the 80s and 90s, I was into the satirical Bloom County, Calvin and Hobbes, or that off the wall of Far Side. But that was about it. And when I got to Spain many years ago, I immediately realized that there was a huge cultural gap between what was popular in the United States and what was popular here. And like so many other things, I soon realized that I was just another American ignorant of so much that was going around me. I'm not saying that I was ignorant of everything. It's just that we didn't know a lot about this sort of stuff because I think it never really reached us. After all, I hadn't even heard of Real Madrid before I first came to Spain. Still, these were the days before internet, so information didn't travel as far and wide or fast as it does today. In any event, European comics were a bit of a mystery to most of us. For the most part, we didn't know really anything about them. If I remember correctly, I think Asterix sounded familiar because we had a friend from England who used to talk about it here and there, and that was sort of the extent of my vague understanding and memories of European comics. And then when you actually get to Europe, you discover that there is a whole world out there. Asterix, as I said, a big French comic, was certainly one of the most famous comics around. I also learned about the other one, The Adventures of Tintin, also possibly the most famous of them all. This was created, if you don't know already, by the famous Belgian graphic artist Hergé. And this legendary strip started all the way back in 1926. But there were others. For example, another Belgian who went by the name of Morris came up with a series set in the Old West, and he called it Lucky Luke, or Lucky Luke, as the Spanish would say, about the adventures of a cowboy by the name of Luke. It was enormously popular in Spain, which really shouldn't surprise me at all, because there were several generations of Spaniards who were totally into the Old West and Westerns. In fact, I learned a lot more about Westerns in terms of movies from my Spanish friends than I had ever learned at home. And I want to tell you all about that, and I'll do that on another day. Anyway, these friends of mine were stunned, I mean, really stunned, to learn that I had never heard of Lucky Luke. They assumed every American kid was basically nurtured on the story, and I was completely clueless. Speaking of Spain and the Spaniards, this country also has had its share of comic series, some of which became enormously popular. And I bring this subject up because just recently, in July of this year, a cartoonist from Spain by the name of Francisco Ibáñez Talavera died. I actually mentioned this in a previous podcast about the latest from Spain. And he was the author of probably the most famous comics series in the history of this country called Mortadelo and Filemón, Mort and Phil. This series was so popular, they still sell these books, translated into over 20 languages, and an estimated 100 million copies of his stories and the albums have been sold. So there's a lot to talk about there. But before we get to that, let's take a look at what came before because comics have been around for a long time in Spain. The first comics in the modern sense appeared in newspapers in the latter half of the 19th century, sort of the way they did in many parts of the world. You had your one panel political and social criticism, and then you had these short strips, much like the ones you find in the funny papers in the United States. They sort of served as a quick break from the more serious news and the reports and the articles. At the turn of the 20th century, a new format came out. It was called the comic magazine, and many of the biggest publishers came out with their versions. And probably the most famous magazine was called TBO, those three letters. TBO, by the 1950s, reached a circulation of about some 450,000 copies per issue before beginning a slow decline. So it was enormously popular, and so much so that the word TBO, which really sounds like tebeo, that's how you pronounce those three letters quickly, and that also sounds like the sentence in Spanish, I see you. So it's basically an acronym. It was eventually accepted by the Royal Spanish Dictionary as a synonym for a comic book, and you can still use that word, and kids will know what you're talking about. So all the way up until the Spanish Civil War in 1936, from 1936 to 1939, comics were very popular. Now, the Civil War, you'd think, would cause a lot of industries to come to a halt, and that's sort of true. But this medium was actually quite popular for propagandistic purposes. So, in a certain way, they weren't too affected at all by it. They were easy to produce for the most part, and they didn't cost a lot, and it was a good way of pumping out political messages and propaganda on both sides. At the end of that war in 1939, when Franco's side won, a number of pro-fascist magazines became popular. These were magazines like Flechas y Pelayos, or Chicos, or another one called Clarín. These series were unmistakably in favor of the principle, the main values of traditional conservative Spain. In other words, keys to being a good Spaniard. The period between 1940 and 1967 is considered to be sort of the golden age of Spanish comics, especially in terms of readership and popularity. And some pretty obvious reasons for that. Comics were cheap reading for the masses at the time, when money was scarce. But this was an industry that was sort of slow in coming. The first years after the war were not easy years for anyone. Material was a problem. There wasn't a lot of papers, so limited amounts were given out to these magazines, but only to government-approved magazines, meaning the government could also control the content. Private publishers had a much more difficult time producing quality magazines. In any event, there were lots of stories and series and strips, many of which were immensely popular in their day, but have been slowly sort of disappearing from the collective memory of humanity as the older generations pass on. Early on, there were sort of two major genres of comics: humor and adventure. The funny pages were classic, goofy, mischievous characters of all ages. Plot lines were often picaresque in nature, also costumbrista, people who, despite all their flaws, were lovable characters at the same time. Famous comic strips, which are still fairly known, well known now, were Zipizape, which were two twins who were always getting into trouble. Another classic strip was called The Ulysses Family, about a middle-class household in Barcelona and the ups and downs of daily life in that city at that time, with plenty of mishaps and humor. At the same time, this was a complicated time for comics because of censorship. It was ever present. Prohibition was twofold. You had sort of political censorship, which put a check on progressive ideas and left-wing ideology. Then you had religious restrictions, which keyed in on moral or immoral behavior or immoral or indecent drawings. And there were also magazines geared at fostering the values of the Franco regimes, the one that they felt were important. Early on, especially for the adventures, many of the heroes were serious, no-nonsense warriors from the Middle Ages. They often greeted each other with a fascist salute and rescued damsels in distress from the Moors, who were Spain's traditional enemy and clearly a racist concept there. The Franco regime and its censorship limited the topics that could be mentioned, and many of the American comics of the day were all but inaccessible. In fact, in the 50s, I believe something like 20%, only 25% of the content, could be from foreign sources. It was sort of a way of controlling potentially subversive ideas from abroad. Now, this was frustrating for many, but on the other hand, this may have allowed Spain to develop its own comic industry more fully than if it had been up against competition from bigger companies from other countries. I've seen that somewhere, so it's sort of an interesting thought. Anyway, the 50s also saw the birth of two of Spain's most successful comics, Mortadelo and Filemón, and Capitán Trueno, which in English would be Captain Thunder. The first to appear was Capitán Trueno by Victor Mora Pujadas and the drawer or the graphic artist Miguel Ambrosio Zaragoza, more commonly known as Ambrose. And this was a historical cartoon about a Spanish knight. It came out in 1956. And it wasn't so much a story about the Middle Ages as it was about their adventures going around the world and mixing with different cultures, different tribes, different peoples. And the figure as a drawing was sort of based on Prince Valiant. And one difference between him and previous knights is that this guy was a little bit more relaxed. He wasn't always so serious. And he could actually smile, which was a bit of a departure from what was done before that. Capitán Trueno did very well, reaching its peak at 350,000 weekly readers. It was considered to be one of the leading series that defended human rights, believe it or not, which is pretty ironic considering this came out during the Franco regime, which certainly did not boast a good record when it came to human rights. But anyway, it was very popular. Then after 1968, the original artist departed. The story carried on for many more decades, though it never really enjoyed the fame it had in those early years. And then about the same time Mortadelo and Filemón was launched, this was in 1958. This was a series with a very different feel to it, as opposed to the dramatic tone of Capitán Trueno. This was pure silliness. The two main characters are a pair of hapless detectives working for a spy agency known as the TIA, DIA, which is a clear reference to the CIA, TIA, as they would say in Spanish, with the difference being that TIA is also the word for aunt and sometimes girl. So that sort of gives you an idea of how the amusing part of it. The humor is simple, almost innocent, the way Spanish humor can be in general, but it has its allure. It's one of those things that are so goofy that in the end you find it funny because of its silliness. It relies heavily on visual slapstick gags. The series has done very well over the decades. It obviously probably did better years ago, not so much now, but it still holds its own. And in 1969, for example, they made these longer stories and published these 44-page albums, which is often the format that you will find this comic in. So by then, it was almost a book. Now, naturally, with the advent of television in the 60s and 70s, popularity declined. But comics hung on pretty well for several more decades. And then after the death of Franco, adult comic magazines became very popular. Now, by that, I don't mean pornography. I mean comic magazines whose content is more geared for adults in terms of humor. Sure, some of it might have been racy and risque, but it also might have focused on social issues, politics, and things like that, things that really wouldn't have interested children. By the late 90s, the switch from paper to digital formats made the decline of many of these magazines basically irreversible. But Spain also continues to produce some excellent comic artists who work both here in Spain and abroad. Now, mention should also go to the satirical comics of Spanish history. During the Franco period, you had things like the Codorniz, which translates as the quail. It was censored several times. And then later on, during the late years of Franco, and especially during the transition period, during the late 70s, adult comics became more and more popular. Other well-known artists admired for sort of their biting humor were Forges, who was famous for his one-panel classic comic, usually very intelligent jokes there. And he actually was famous for coming up with sort of his own type of language, very good stuff there. And also Antonio Mingote, who was a bit of a costumbrista in many ways, but also could be a masterful user of irony. So they could look simple there, but if you gave a second look or a third look or a second thought or a third thought, you'd see there was something more to it. Now, one of the most famous magazines of this kind was one called El Jueves, called Thursday, which actually would reach the stands every Wednesday. They did that on purpose. It was supposed to be amusing. Anyway, this was an irreverent magazine that took pop shots at just about everyone. To give you an idea, it was sort of like the Spanish equivalent of the famous French magazine Charlie Hebdo, or Mad Magazine in the United States. I don't know why I'm talking about it in the past. It still exists. So probably not as popular as it used to be, but it does still exist. Anyway, it took aim at everyone. And groups like the Royal Family were no exception when it came to targeting institutions. And that was pretty risky because there were certain laws prohibiting the insulting of the monarchy. Using images of the royal family improperly is a crime and actually can get you put in the slammer. So as you can see, Franco wasn't the only one who would censor the media. A famous case came up just as recently as 2007. There was a cover to this magazine in response to a new pre-electoral promise by the socialist government that each couple, if they had a baby between, I think, 2007 and 2010, you would get 2,500 euros for that baby. And that was suspiciously coming out at the time of the elections then. So the cover of the Jueves that time depicted the crown prince of the time, he's now king, Felipe, and his wife, Leticia, having sex. In fact, they weren't just having sex. He was basically doing her from behind, doggy style, to make it even more denigrating. And basically, they were shouting, let's go for those 2,500. And the prince is saying to the princess, if you get pregnant, this will be the closest I've come to working in my life. And things like that. It was daring. So yes, they were taking jabs at Prime Minister Zapatero's electoral promise, but at the same time, they were taking jabs at the prince and his wife, too. Irreverent, absolutely. Indecent, absolutely. Funny, absolutely. Refreshing for a sector in Spain, which all too often can be more mainstream than they think. And they were taking a risk. They were giving it a shot. Apparently, they didn't think it was going to be such a big deal. But it was immediately accused of vilifying the crown in the most gratuitous and unnecessary way. A judge, a famous judge from Spain, basically stopped the presses and ordered the issue to be removed from the stands. They call it in Spanish kidnapping, the issue, for its alleged insulting of the crown prince. In the end, the artist and the writer of that joke on the cover were convicted and fined 3,000 euros each for defaming the institution of the monarchy. The Spanish press has a long tradition of treating the monarchy with near ridiculous deference. It does basically no wrong, and when it does, which at times has been egregious, much of it has been swept under the rug and ignored. But this was one of those rare moments that a creator took a chance and sort of hammered in an amusing, audacious, biting bit of satire and criticism, and literally paid a price for it, leaving media outlets from around the world scratching their heads. This is a fascinating story, since it proved to be a shocking setback for freedom of expression. And I will definitely be doing another episode about this and give you more details, because it's an interesting story. But I think we will stop with that today. We've learned a little bit about the history of comics in Spain over the last, say, 100 years, more or less. And we hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spaindemain. Please feel free to leave us any comments, because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spaindemain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. And you can also go to our new YouTube channel, where we have these podcasts with a little bit of visual aid, and subscribe. And that'll be all. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.